But at any rate, however long you do six and seven, however much you might want to think about these steps or not, depending on how your sponsor talks to you or how you think about it and what's important to you. The Big Book says this: now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Here's steps 8 and 9. And what have you done up to now? You've done a lot of writing. You've done a lot of talking. You've done a lot of thinking. And you've said a prayer. And from the Big Book perspective, it's all important. But big deal. Where's the action that you're going to take? Faith without works is dead. And that's what steps 8 and 9 are about. Because it's within those steps that we're promised the spiritual life. The promises come in the middle of step 9 and after step 9. Those are the promises, the wonderful promises of this program, the ones that we ache for when we join, especially the second set of promises, what are called the hidden promises. And that whole sense of action often is missing. We start to, oh, okay, I've asked God to remove my defects of character. It's just a matter of God doing it, you know? And the original edition of the OA 12 and 12 sometimes gave that impression that you say the prayer, you say the step 7 prayer, and then God will remove your defects of character. Big Book doesn't say, and the second edition doesn't say that. That's been taken out of the second edition. Because the emphasis is on how do we remove our defects of character. We become different people from the people who have had those defects of character. How do you become a different person from the person with those defects of character? You find a way to make up for your selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and fear, and to learn to live a life full of unselfishness, honesty, considerateness to others, and free of fear. You're a model now. You've changed. You've had this personality change. How do you do that? You make amends for the harms you've done to people to whom you can make amends without harming them or others. And that's 8 and 9 together. In the original Oxford groups, it was one thing. You just make amends, you make restitution. But in when Bill put them into 2, he did what every sponsor would have said. I've talked about this, I think it was yesterday, maybe today, that you would never harm someone by making an amends. And the Big Book discusses that. And so that would have been found. What did I do? Okay. Sorry. Now, the Big Book's discussion, I used to read and say, that's a nice discussion. And Blaine once said in a workshop that I was listening to, the Big Book lists every possible amend you could possibly do. And I would say, that's ridiculous. There are actually only 7 examples. And then I began to study a bit more on the principle that if the book is so good in some areas, it must be good in others. And I found that Blaine was right. The Big Book has a list, and you know, maybe I will, I'm not sure I can use the flip chart. There are 3 possible kinds of direct amends. And then there's a living amend. And the Big Book discusses these 3 possible kinds of direct amends and then revisits those direct amends on the issue of whether or not harm would come to others if you made them. So I'll go through them. It's not quite in the right order the second time around. It's not in the same order the second time around. The first list of amends, I guess I should read. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. Don't burn your step 4. But I've given you in the book, and again downloadable. It doesn't reproduce well in this edition. On page 53, a step 8 and 9 list that might help you. But let me talk first about the Big Book's approach. We go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris, the garbage, which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes, another prayer. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning, we go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. The Big Book then discusses three kinds of direct amends. You've done some harm, how do you make up for it? The first direct amend is discussed bottom of page 76. Well, there's a general concept, but bottom of page 76 to page 78 in the middle. And this is the direct amends of an apology. This is what I did. I am sorry. God help, I'm trying to change my life. I will do my best to make up for anything I've done. It's an apology. And they give us some guidelines about this. Maybe the person has done more harm than you have done to him. It doesn't matter. You sweep off your side of the street. You never mention the harm he has done. We don't criticize them. We don't argue. Bottom of page 77, simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. You mean I mentioned that I'm a member of Overeaters Anonymous? Yes. I'm a food addict. It was killing me. The only the way that I can get out of it is to do the 12 steps. The 12 steps require me, and I'm so thankful that I have the opportunity to make up for the harm that I have done for you. Okay? Page 78, they go on. They say we don't discuss his faults. At the end of the first paragraph, if his manner is calm, frank, if our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the results. They're going to say 9 times out of 10, they may warm up to you and they may make any amends for the harms they've done. They may welcome you with open arms as a long lost brother or whatever, or they may kick you out of their office. But it doesn't bother you. You will be gratified with the result. You've made our demonstration, done our part, it's water over the dam. It happened to me once. I made an amends, and by the way, I owe an amends to everyone to whom I have ever used the word amend. Amend is a verb to change something. Amends is a singular and plural at the same time. And there is no noun of amend. It drives me nuts that that's the case, but it's true. So I make an amends, and I make many amends. It doesn't fit well, but that's the fact. You look it up in a dictionary. I used to be very careful to say amend. I make my amend, and I have to make amends and amends for having done it. I made an amends to a person who had been a mentor to me, and who then soured on me and was kind of brutal to me in certain ways. But there was an amends I had to make. So I went to see him, made an appointment to see him in his office, and I told him, this is what I did, I'm very sorry for having done it. I don't remember that, he said. I knew he had. And he basically ushered me out of there. I didn't kick me out, but ushered me out. I walked out again, light as a feather. I have done what I had to do. My relationship to him at that point was to treat him like the older brother that he used to be to me without feeling bad about it, without feeling frightened of him. He was harming himself. He was losing the younger brother, in effect, that I could have been. I felt sorry for him that he hadn't reciprocated, but I felt great. So I wouldn't see him very often, but he would sort of avoid me, but I'd go up to him and say hello and how are you? As I would normally, because I was now equal. There's nothing I was ashamed of. It took a long time, but ultimately he warmed up to me again. And that was good. I don't see him that often, but it's not the same relationship we had. But it's no longer a relationship where I'm afraid to see him, or as it turned out, for a long time he was afraid to see me. So that's the first. It is the apology. If there's anything I can do to balance the books, please tell me and I'll do it. Okay? The second one is the second paragraph, is the second full paragraph on page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. That restitution is not just an apology, it's payment. If you've caused someone financial harm, you owe them the money. You can't just say, I'm sorry. How can you? You have to go beyond that and take responsibility for your actions. And they talk about you're not afraid of disclosing your alcoholism. You tell them what you're doing, and You arrange the best deal you can to let these people know you're sorry. And Joe and Charlie talk about a friend of theirs who took, was it 25 years to pay off the $100,000 that he had cheated the life insurance out of? But he did it religiously. You know, every month he would send whatever he could. And then the third one is perhaps we've committed a criminal offense or maybe we've padded the expense account. This is the harm that you do to someone and to society and to others. You know, it goes beyond just a person. It is more people. It may be the criminal offense where you have harmed the fabric of society. It may be that you've padded your expense account and you've harmed a corporation, a group of people. But it goes beyond just sort of saying, I'm really sorry, and I'm repaying it. You're taking responsibility for your actions to a larger community. Okay? Those are the three they discuss. And when you think about it, how many more can there be? There's the direct apology, expanding it. There's an apology plus restitution, expanding that. There's taking responsibility before a larger community, a larger group. Okay? Page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles we find guiding. Page 79. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing, we have to be, we must not shrink at anything. Okay? That's pretty strong words. For most of us in OA, you know what? That's... a lot of that isn't going to apply to us because we've been isolated and passive and victims. It will apply to many of us, but not all of us. But we have to do this. And then the big book says, okay, but usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. Now we're getting the question, we've got the direct amends that we know we can make, the whole spectrum of direct amends. But what if doing those amends would harm other people? They then give three examples, not in the same order, of amends that could potentially harm others and how you should handle those amends. The first one is the guy who had remarried and hadn't paid alimony. And what should he do? Because if he pays alimony to the first wife, he starves the second family. What does he do? He discusses it with his family. He discusses it with the AA people, bottom page 79, we suggested he write his first wife admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. He did, and he also sent a small amount of money. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail. She insisted. Of course, she did not. Okay? So that's restitution. I will do my best to pay, but I can't starve the people who depend upon me. Okay? Here's an example of the restitution, which was the second example in the first listing of them. The next one, they say on page 80, before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we've obtained permission, if consulted with others, ask God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. The next example is the worst example in the big book. I'll explain why I say that. This guy, he lives in a small town. He lends money to another person, a bitterly hated business. No, he borrowed money from a bitterly hated business rival, didn't give him a receipt, then lies about having borrowed that money, doesn't pay him back. The guy loses his complete reputation. So here's a harm that goes beyond restitution. He not only has to pay the guy back, but he also has to take public responsibility for the reputation that he harmed with this person. But if he does that, he'll harm not only his reputation, but the reputation of his business partner and harm his family. Ultimately, his family says, and his business partner says, go ahead. So then, all of this is a powerful story. Then he gets up in church that he hardly ever attends. And he attended church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. His action met widespread approval. Today he's one of the most trusted citizens of his town. Did he pay the money back? I don't know. Doesn't say it. I find that to be one of those things. He had to pay that money back. You know? What happened to the guy whom he defamed? What happened to him? Nothing. Everyone loves him. Wonderful. So that's the third kind of amends, where you're taking public responsibility within a larger group of people for the harm. If you gossip about someone, apologizing to that person, or if you harm that person's reputation, apologizing to that person is nothing if you don't redeem the person's reputation in a larger community. So that's the same as this criminal offense and the padding of the expense account. So you see that they've revisited two out of three of the amends. Now they're going to the direct eyeball-to-eyeball apology amends by discussing, you've had an affair, you have the little woman, no, but he says, I can't remember what it is. It's just, the words are just awful. He's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. And a man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Do we tell our wives of our affair? And their answer is, you know what, if she doesn't know about it, it will probably hurt her to tell her. And you should just stop it. Even though you would like to confess it, it causes more harm than good. Okay? I want to say that may not be true. I mean, I really think that, you know, if you know much about Bill Wilson's life, or what has been written about Bill Wilson, there's not necessarily proof of this, but there certainly is this sense on many biographers that Bill was not an entirely pure husband. And this may be his rationale for not having told his wife. On the other hand, from those writers, it appears clear that she did know about all these things. So, you know, may not be rationale. But whatever, you don't tell someone about something they don't know about that would hurt them more to know. The example of the mother, I've hated you for 25 years, now I love you. You don't say that. There are people in this world to whom I would like to say, my amends to you is to apologize for not having ended our relationship right away and told you that you needed psychiatric help. I'm never going to say that. You know? Or I have an amends that I would love to make to an ex-girlfriend and to say, remember that time when I was being taken by our friend? You were in the car with me. Our friend was taking me to a party, and you said, maybe I'll go to the party. I said, oh, no, no, you shouldn't go. And you said, you're ashamed to take me to that party. And I said, no, I'm not. I was. And I was wrong. You were worth 20,000 times more than the people at that party, but I was ashamed of you. I'm sorry. Why should I say, hey, remember, here's me from 55 years ago. Here's this embarrassing, horrible moment you had in the car. I'm really sorry for it. I'd love to do it. And if I ever met her again, I would never say, remember that incident. But I'd say, you know what? I don't think I treated you properly when we had a relationship. And I am sorry for that. I just recently, someone wrote to me, an ex-girlfriend from 50 years ago. I'm cleaning up my apartment. I found some letters from you. Do you want them back? And I did have apologies I wanted to make to that person. I didn't want to remind that person of this or that, but I had apologies. I thought about it. I'm always curious to see what letters I wrote when I was younger. But I wrote back and said, thank you for your offer. It's so nice to hear from you. Those letters were written by an immature person who was not as kind as he could have been to people. I'm sorry for anything I did to you, but I really don't want those letters. I forgot the words I used. They were better than what I just gave you. So I was able to make amends to her. But there are many amends I can't make. I don't know where the person is. I don't know what their circumstances are. And there are many amends that are not of the kind that they talk about. So they talk about that. And the Big Book gives all kinds of examples of this kind of direct amend. What if your wife knows about the affair but wants more details about who the woman was and all that? No, that would harm the woman. You don't increase the jealousy factor. It's over. It's done with. I am sorry. I'm going to be a better husband. So that's the direct eyeball-to-eyeball amend. Page 82 then, so those are the three possible amends discussed from both the direct and then the would harm happen. And then on page 82, they indicate the fourth kind of amend. If we have no such, we're in the middle. If we have no such complications, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. These, you know, the only, you see, again, sobriety is taken for granted. Of course you have to keep sober, but that's not what this program is about. This program is about getting into a spiritual life, which will save you from wanting to go back. And they talk about the alcoholic as a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. A man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. Page 83, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We have to sit down with the family, frankly analyze the past. We clean house. The spiritual life, page 83, is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual experiences, we're not going to force them to do it. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. This is living amends. You know, it's not enough to say, and there's a wonderful story, it was Dr., which one is it? Physician, heal thyself. Or was it, yeah, Physician, heal thyself, where he apologizes to the wife and she turns on him and says, you do not know the harm you have done to me. And he's sort of taken aback and he says, there's nothing I can do to or say to her, but I noticed one thing. I never did the dishes, and now I'm going to do the dishes every single day. And that will be sort of beginning of my amends, pardon me.
What if they did?
I'll talk about that. The big book talks about that. I'll talk, and what kind of amends do you owe to the sexual abuser? What kind of amends do I owe to the lawyer who betrayed me? What kind of amends do I owe Hitler? I mean, these are complicated, but I just wanted to give you the theory, and then I wanted to talk practicality. So they talk about the living amends. And then the next paragraph, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. There may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. People are dead. There are many ways people make amends to the people who are dead. I'm not a symbolic kind of person. This doesn't mean much to me, but it means a lot to other people in this program. They write them a letter, they go to the tombstone. They go to the grave. They read the letter, and then they rip it up or they burn it or something like that. That wouldn't work with me because symbolism I'm a literalist in that respect. But it means a lot to people. Or they write them a letter, they don't necessarily go to the tombstone, but they do it. I had to make amends to my grandparents, and they were dead. I had a conversation with them in my mind. And I knew exactly what they would say. As soon as I started the conversation, I knew what they would say. So that was my amends to them. Sometimes the amends are to do something in the future, in honor of the person whom you harmed in the past. It's complex in its own way. I had a friend who walked, it was in a small town in India, and walked out of a restaurant because she didn't like the service and didn't pay the bill. And it bothered her for 10 years. She remembered the town, but she had no idea what the restaurant was or even whether it was in existence. And so she found an OA group there and sent the money to them and asked them to spend it wisely. Let's say you stole a lot of money and you might go to, you will go to jail if you disclose it. But you have a family and you're supporting your family. You've changed your life around. What do you do? Often you will go to a lawyer and say, without disclosing my identity, here's the money. Please pay it back. So you are making your amends, but you're not taking responsibilities such that would harm your family. Before I get on to the more complex ones, I just want to read this and tell a joke. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. If you remember David Copperfield, there's this Uriah Heep's, I'm very humble, I'm very humble. You know, sort of this servile, the scraping, the sort of like, oh, I'm more humble than you are. You know, that's not what they're looking for. They're looking for real humility. And the joke is, it's a Jewish joke that might not appeal to everyone here. I mean, it's not an ethnic joke, but it refers to a small town in Russia. If you've seen Fiddler on the Roof, you know they call them shtetls. It's the little towns where Jews would live in the old days. They were restricted in where they could live, and they lived in these small towns. And it was a very small town, and there was a synagogue, one synagogue, small group. And it was the holiest of holy days, Yom Kippur or Yom Kippur, as some people pronounce it. And it's the day where you ask for forgiveness from God. It's the day you're judged and you fast and you try to make up for whatever harm you've done in that year. And in this synagogue, there's a small congregation, and the rabbi gets up and he says, "God, before you, I am nothing. I'm nothing." And he falls on his face and he's saying, "I'm nothing. I'm nothing." And the richest man in town gets up. He says, "God, before you, I am nothing, I am nothing." And he falls on his face, "I'm nothing, I'm nothing." Then the town beggar gets up and he says, "God, before you, I am nothing, I am nothing." And he falls on his face, "I am nothing, I am nothing." And the rich man whispers to the rabbi, "Look who thinks he's nothing." So that's the, I'm more humble than you are, right? I deserve to be humble. I'm rich, so I can be humble, but you are humble. You know? It's this example. Okay, but let's talk now. I have 15 minutes, so that's just perfect timing. Let's talk about the more complex things. Let's talk about sexual trauma, sexual abuse. I've had three sponsees, probably more, but that I remember who were sexually abused horribly by some man. Three men. One of them decided that her amends would be to go to the police. Even if we don't have a statute of limitations for sexual assault in Canada. And she decided, "I have to stop this person. I haven't been able to talk about it. It's time for me to talk about it." The second one announced at a family gathering, a large family gathering, "This man sexually abused me, this uncle sexually abused me when I was younger. I'm not letting my children alone with him. And if I were you, I wouldn't let your children alone with him." That was how she saw it. And the third person said, "This man is, I don't know how old he was, 95 years old. He's alone. No one loves him. No one cares for him. He's dying alone. And I don't owe him a thing. I'm not going to do anything to him. He's already living in his own hell." Now, 10 years later, one of them might have done something else, and one of them might have done something else. But that meant that was right for them. And the most important thing, though, and look, if you're looking at the forum, page 53, is you write down the person you've harmed, and then you write down, what harm did I do to that person? The harm you might have done to that person. And I should have mentioned this when we got to, when we were talking about page 552. What is the harm? Or put it this way. It is spiritually true that any time a person does harm to you, he or she does harm to himself or herself. That's true. I was talking about the nail in the coffin. Any time you harm someone else, you put another nail in your own coffin because you become less and less able to become a different person. The more you're used to hurting people, the more you hurt people in a horrible way, the more that you become unable to change. The brilliance of this program is that we have an avenue for making amends and for changing our personality, for becoming someone different from the person who did the things that we did. But the more harm people do, the more they are killing themselves as well. They're killing their soul at the very least. If you accept that proposition, and it is a spiritually true proposition, then the longer this person does harm, the more that, to you or to someone else, the more that person is doing harm to himself or herself. The harm that you did may be that when you could have been believed, you didn't disclose it. The harm that you did may be that you didn't disclose it to those people you should have disclosed it to help them understand the harm that you've experienced. You know, the children and stuff. I talked about that earlier. The harm may be that you've let that person rule your life and have not lived the life you could have lived. That's what Hitler was with me. My amends to Hitler was to take him out of my life. That was my amends to him. There's an amazingly powerful story. Back in the 70s, there's a woman who was abducted, I think, from Los Angeles and taken somewhere to the what's the huge desert near Las Vegas?
Mojave?
No, there's another one. I can't remember what desert it was. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He sexually assaulted her horribly for 4 days, had her a prisoner tied up, and then cut off her hands, hoping, leaving her to die. Awful, just awful. And she escaped. And she was rescued. And he was arrested and put in jail forever, I hope. And she was interviewed about 10 years later about that. And the interviewer said, you must, and she had prosthetics, you know, she was, you must hate that man. And her answer showed that she must have had some incredible counseling. Listen, that man took 4 days out of my life. I'm damned if I'm going to let him take any more. And so the amends you might make is to say, you are no longer part of my life. You're not in my mind. I'm not carrying you the burden of you. Or it might be to go to the police, or it might be to do something else. Or it might be to help other people not suffer from what you suffered by getting involved in some volunteer activity or something of that sort. But if you don't know the harm you've done to that person, there's no way you'll know what kind of amends you can make. And that's really important, because sometimes people, well, I'm never going to apologize to that son of a whatever. No, you may not have to apologize. You may have to go to the police about that person. So don't anticipate the amends you're going to have to make until you've done the analysis of the kind of harm you've done. And the harm you may have done may be letting that person rule your life, not talking, telling the truth when the truth should be told, lying to yourself about the reality that it happened once, but it didn't happen, not one time, but it happened in the past, it's not happening now, and you're not letting life into you. You're not allowing yourself to live. I don't know the answer. I only know that my friends have found the answers using the amends process in steps 8 and 9. You will note that nowhere in the big book is there a discussion of making amends to yourself. In this program, we hear very, very much, and it may be that there's an Al-Anon connection, I don't know, I think someone once told me there was, of the first person I have to make amends to is myself. And I understand what that means, and I want to encourage you not to say it and not to think of it in this context. There are times when we enable people to do bad things. We enable our children not to learn from their mistakes. We enable the alcoholic to continue to be an alcoholic. We enable people to run roughshod over us and to expect us to do things that they could be doing themselves. We're harming them by doing that, by being able to be walked over. And the amends that I owe to myself may very often be to say no instead of saying yes. But when, am I making that noise? Is that coming out of the speaker? Voice, that's awful. Okay, well, I'll stand up and not allow my belt to touch that. So think of it as helping the other person and not helping yourself. It will end up helping yourself because you'll have a lot more time on your hands and not doing what other people should be doing. But if you think of the other person rather than yourself, you're being outer-directed. And it also gives you more of a moral fiber. It's not for my benefit that I'm doing it. It's for your benefit. And so that's one example of I have to make amends to myself. The other example is I need time to myself. I'm always so busy that I don't have time for myself. I need time to have the bath, you know, with the incense or with the candles and all that. I don't make fun of that. We do need those things. But think of it as needing those things to reinvigorate ourselves so we can go and help someone else. And you'll recreate this thing as not, I need to be pampered, I need this for myself, but you will transform it into, I need to be a whole person and an honest person and a clear person in order to be able to be of maximum usefulness to others, which is what the big book is all about. Okay. halfway through, we're given promises. If page 83, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. If you want to find 12 promises out of the 11 that are here, one of them can be, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. Halfway through what? Halfway through step 9. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will, now, that's really important. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. Sometimes to get 12 people, divide that sentence into two. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I want to stop there and talk about how people who have been traumatized have more to offer to the person who still suffers than I do. I've got a clear mind, and I've been blessed with tremendous education and the ability to speak in public, and I've got a good analysis. I'm giving that to you. But let me tell you, I cannot say to someone, as some of my sponsees can say to someone, listen, I was raped when I was 8 years old, and I don't eat over it. And that can be your blessing, too. They can say that. I can't. And you can talk. If you've been traumatized, you can find meaning. I'm not saying you can find a usefulness in the horrible things that happened to you by being able to see how your experience can benefit others. If you're deeply religious, you might say to yourself, well, that's what life was meant to be. I was being groomed for this purpose. I don't believe that, of course, but I can see how it could transform me, that my horrible experiences can at the very least be transformed into something that can help someone else and give them hope and clarity and purpose and freedom from their addictions. And that is something that allows you not to regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. You can now speak about it because it is something you have made your amends about, and you're now using this to help someone. Matter of fact, the big book says on page 124, words that are so important, I think. This painful past, the alcoholic's past, thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it's almost the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with the problem. I want to go, I'll go on to the last two sentences in that paragraph. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest position you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And if you look at these horrible things that happened to you as at least a way of transforming the trauma into help and hope, at least you can provide meaning to the horrible things that happened to you in a way that I cannot. And there are people who have suffered so much trauma and have recovered from so much trauma using the steps that they are absolute inspirations to me. I mean, I'm overwhelmed by what they've overcome. And they are such beacons of hope to people who come into this program. So that's the promise that's available to you as you work steps 8 and 9. The promise is that whatever horrible things have happened to you will become ways by which you can help others. Let's just finish the two promises, and then we'll quit. I've got 4 minutes. I think I can do that. Self-seeking will slip away. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. I'll discuss that more when we get to step 11. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
Not.
Some people do that, some people. I was waiting. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, spiritual experience, sometimes slowly, spiritual awakening. They will always materialize if we work with them. These are wonderful promises. I take nothing away from them. We repeat them all the time. At the bottom of this page are the promises that I wanted when I got into this program. And we call them the hidden promises because people don't talk about them. But these are the promises that I think we should emphasize and look for it. Right at the bottom, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, even our binge foods. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in our binge food, in liquor in our binge foods. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely, page 85, and normally we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor, our binge foods, has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off and said the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Tomorrow, I will be discussing steps 10, 11, and 12 as the means by which we keep in fit spiritual condition. Steps 10, 11, and 12 are clean house, continue to clean house. Clean house, ask, something and help others. Clean house. Trust God and help others, that's right. And that's basically, these are the maintenance and growth steps. And I'll discuss how, what part they play, and I'll discuss especially when we talk about step 11, the things that I think are really important to know about step 11 and how they have saved me from relapse over 25 years. I'll talk about how step 10 and step 11, how meditation, the big book, is very different from what we think of as meditation today. It's not saying om, that's wonderful to do, but it is very practical. Step 11 is very practical. And step 12, I'm going to emphasize that and spend more time on step 12 than anything, because I think that's where OA needs help. And I want to talk about that. So are we going to hear any instructions about the dinner tonight or anything like that? Okay, thank you very much, and we'll see you.
Thank you.
Well, it's 8:30 tomorrow morning, not 9.
What's happening tonight?
Tonight at 8 o'clock, I'll be here, and anyone who wants to talk about food and plans of eating, we will have a little workshop together.
Okay.
Okay, about an hour, no more than an hour.
We have to be out by 9.
We have to be up by 9, perfect.